Welcome to this podcast of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club of California, by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at www.commonwealthclub.org/Inforum. You can also find Inforum on Facebook, MySpace, and LinkedIn.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club, by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate on civic issues. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. I am Josh Richman, politics and legal affairs writer for the Oakland Tribune and this evening's moderator. Tonight we are here to discuss marijuana economics, the pros and cons of California's cash crop. Tonight's panelists will cut through the smoke in an illuminating exploration of the state's largest cash crop. Due to the progress of both Tom Amiano's bill, the Marijuana Control Regulation and Education Act, AB 390, and Oakland's AB 390 bill, taxation on medical marijuana, is no longer wishful thinking of the past. Tonight we host Chief Scott Kirkland, the Chief of Police of the El Cerrito Police Department, also a member of the Board of Directors of the California Peace Officers Association and of the California Police Chiefs Association, Dr. Eugene Schoenfeld, court-appointed panel psychiatrist of the Superior Courts of Alameda, Contra Costa, Marin, and San Francisco counties, and Richard Lee, founder of Oaksterdam University and founder of the Oakland Civil Liberties Alliance. So we're going to try to limit our discussion more to the fiscal aspects of what we're talking about tonight. There's been some debate and some questions so far over what the fiscal aspect of the Amiano bill would be. The Board of Equalization had estimated a $1.4 billion per year revenue stream for the state. I believe we're going to discuss that first because I believe that the chief has some issues with the way that that number was arrived at. So, Chief, tell us a little bit about why you doubt that that $1.4 billion per year figure is what it seems to be.
A couple things. I'm very disappointed by the analysis that was done by the State Board of Equalization staff legislation. And the reason I say that, as you wade through the analysis, and it is available online, is that they are relying on a sole source for their information. That sole source of information, as they allude to, is a study that was done in 2006, and it's entitled Marijuana Production in the United States. At that time, they estimated that there was 22.3 million pounds of marijuana grown in the United States. From that poundage, the analyst's office then went into their money allocation. It was written by a gentleman. It was written by a gentleman that I had not heard of, and I was concerned about that. It was written by John Gitman. And some of you in this audience might be familiar with John Gitman. I was not. John Gitman served as president and national of the Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML. In his study that they relied on as their sole source, he alludes to the fact of the Drug Science Organization. He relies on six studies in his report. Lo and behold, he owns that company. I think if we're going to talk about this debate in an open forum, in an honest debate, we have to have statistics that we can rely on. We have to have numbers that we can rely on. This shows me why the state of California is in such dire straits. That being is that they are making revenue projections that are based on absolutely nothing. I am concerned about that. More than that, let's talk about the fee itself. As you know, the rhetoric now being posted by the reform groups is that we're going to have a $50 tax. That's not what the bill says, nor is that what the analysis show. It's supposed to be a $50 tax on marijuana. When you read the bill, it's not a tax, it's a fee. Why the difference? As you all realize that if it is a tax, it has to gain two-thirds majority vote in the legislative process. If it's a fee, it's 50% passage. That's a major difference. There are some that are talking about it. If this does go through the legislative process, there'll be a lawsuit in that regards. When you look at the money itself, when you look at it and the cost of marijuana to our society, substance abuse to our society, the figures outweigh it. When you look at the $50 assessment, it's $50 per ounce. As some of you might be aware, some of you might not, when you go into these types of collectives, cooperatives, marijuana is not sold only in ounces. You're able to buy joints. You're able to buy grams. There is no provisions in this to tax those types of substance, only ounces. That's a concern. When you look at it from another cost standpoint, is that in their report, they also say that the legalization of marijuana would reduce the street price by 50%. If you look at their revenue projections, part of that is sales tax from this substance. It's going to be reduced by 50%. They didn't take that into account. They are also projecting, if it does go down by 50%, consumption would go up 40%. They're also talking about the imposition of the money, and it's very, very troubling to me. I just believe that if we're going to have a fair and honest debate, let's get some accurate statistics out there.
Absolutely. Chief, let me stop you there for a second. I'd like to ask Mr. Lee to explain some of the differences between the proposed Amiano legislation, which has actually been on the table for a couple of months now, which is still in a state of flux, as I understand. The Assemblyman has put it in the suspension file. It's going to be revamped and brought forward again early next year, probably. But there are some significant structural differences in the regulatory and tax scheme between that bill and the ballot measure, the proposed ballot measure that you sent to the Attorney General's office this week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. First of all, I'd just like to say you can go to our website, taxcannabis2010.org, for the exact language, or now you can go to the Attorney General's website as well. Basically, our initiative has two parts to it. The first part is to allow personal possession of cannabis and personal cultivation of a small amount. And then the second part is where we're different than the AB 390. There we give cities and counties, the unincorporated part that they govern, the option to tax and regulate the sales and commercial cultivation of cannabis. We see this as a first step. We have the problem with federal law that we can't order people to break federal law. That would be thrown out in the courts. So that's one of the reasons we wrote it as a local option initiative. The other reason is to follow along the history of the cultural reality. Right now we already have a wet and dry system in California for medical marijuana. We have about 40 jurisdictions that permit and regulate cannabis sales or collectives or cooperatives. Some of the cities don't even really, like Oakland, aren't as concerned about them being total cooperatives and have even gone a little bit beyond state law already with the way they tax and regulate the outlets, cannabis outlets. And then, of course, you have the other cities that have banned totally any dispensaries or medical marijuana distribution. And so we already have that system that's already happened naturally, and so the idea is to follow along that reality already.
One of the things, one of the concerns I've heard voiced about any legalization and taxation scheme is that I believe both the Amiano bill in its current form and your proposed ballot measure would make an exception from any kind of taxation for medicinal use that's currently protected under state law. And so you come up against the question, well, we already have a medicinal system where, at least anecdotally and perhaps more than that, there's some notoriety attached to the ease with which one can get a medical marijuana card in California in a lot of places. And I think this is something with which Dr. Schoenfeld may have some insights to share in terms of where the dividing line could easily be made between legalized recreational use and medicinal use.
Well, you know, medical marijuana recommendations should require a legitimate medical visit to a physician, rather than just a perfunctory, few minutes with the patient, which unfortunately does occur in some of the clinics that we know about. I think that if marijuana were legalized, as Mr. Lee's proposal advocates, there would be a reduction certainly in the arrest, convictions, and fines for people presently using marijuana without a medical marijuana recommendation. So that's one way that these bills could impact the state financially in a positive way. Also, if it were legal, there could be taxation, and there would be more openness about the growing, which is now, you know, mostly hidden. I mean, despite the talk of collectives, most of the dispensaries in California do not meet the state requirements. They are supposed to be not-for-profit collectives. I think very few of the dispensaries meet that requirement. So if marijuana were legalized, there would be, as I say, a reduction in cost because of law enforcement would not be involved, you know, in most cases. These proposals state that marijuana users, if they're using it recreationally, must be over the age of 21. At present, the medical marijuana laws permit the issuance of marijuana recommendations to individuals over the age of 18, which I think is wrong because it's pretty well known that adolescents are still developing, and there's a lot of evidence that the chronic use of intoxicants such as alcohol or marijuana may delay emotional maturity in people. So in my own practice, I don't issue marijuana recommendations to people under the age of 21. And apparently in Mr. Lee's proposal, recreational use would be limited, you know, as it is with alcohol, to people over the age of 21.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about this sort of cost-benefit analysis that you're alluding to. You know, the idea that there would be some sort of revenue stream. The chief has voiced his concerns about the numbers that have been thrown out there by the Board of Equalization. There would be some sort of revenue stream created, but at the same time, there would also be some savings in terms of the law enforcement and corrections, be it county corrections or state corrections. I think, though, we have a divergence of opinion perhaps on the panel of whether that would be offset by increases in other related law enforcement costs. Chief, why don't you start out on that, and then we'll hear from Mr. Lee after that.
The advocates have once again crafted a very, very well-intentioned message to the public. They are playing our emotions once again in regards to increasing the taxes on this substance to try to legalize it. They are playing our emotions because we're all in a financial depression, recession, depends on who you believe in. There is not a person that has not been affected with the economy of California as well as the nation today. They are trying to glean that one piece of emotion we all have and trying to justify what they're trying to do. But I think what we have to do is look at the cost. One of the concerns I have is in regards to substance abuse. We currently have legalized both alcohol as well as tobacco. From a public health standpoint, when we look at the costs associated with it, we're talking about the criminal justice system, the social costs. From a public health standpoint, I question whether or not we would reverse our course. I realize that's not going to happen, but it should be a basis as we look to introducing another substance into our society. In May of 2009, the National Center of Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University released a study. It was the first of its kind study in which they went back 3 years and looked at the spending of the federal government, state government, and local governments on substance abuse. The statistics are alarming. And I realize that we don't have time to look at all those statistics, but I think we should concentrate on California, since we are in California. The statistics in California, they are talking about raising anywhere from $1.2 to $2 billion in terms of revenue. But by the same token, let's analyze that. When you look in 2005, state of California spent $19.9 billion of substance abuse and addiction, or we spent $545.09 per capita. That's based on a population of 36.5 million. but the state of California collected $1.4 billion, or we collected $38.69 in taxes. Can we afford to introduce another substance that is going to be abused and is abused? When you look at the history of our NL, a lot of the medical research right now, why are the young people going into the emergency room? Marijuana right now is overwhelmingly surpassing alcohol. It's costing us today.
Mr. Lee.
Well, first question I'd have for the police chief is, does he think if we made booze illegal, our social costs would go down? I mean, do we want to return to Al Capone and Thompson submachine guns driving around, you know, shooting each other over selling alcohol? And, you know, wouldn't we have more social costs from all those the prohibition violence and people getting bathtub gin, going blind like they used to back in the 1920s? So to me, the argument that the social costs outweigh the taxes, you know, are rested on one premise, and that's that all use or consumption would immediately end with prohibition, and we know that's not true. You know, if I went to history, I had a history class in school, and, you know, we know the history of alcohol prohibition, that it just made things worse. We didn't legalize alcohol because we said it's a totally safe drug, it's a wonderful drug that everybody should use. We legalized it because making it illegal was worse than making it legal, and that's my view with cannabis, that by bringing it into a tax and regulate scheme that we can bring in tax dollars for the government, and we can try to mitigate some of the social costs a lot better than we can with it illegal. And, you know, it's a very simple argument.
Dr. Schoenfeld, was there something you wanted to throw in on this?
Yes. alcohol and tobacco kill hundreds of thousands of people a year. Marijuana kills no one. The reason why there are more...
Yeah, a lot of. Can I just add real quick to what you just said? That a lot of people don't realize how safe cannabis is compared to alcohol, that hundreds of frat boys drop dead from alcohol overdose every year because we don't teach that in drug education, how dangerous a drug alcohol is. Do you know how much cannabis it takes to kill a lab rat? 20 pounds dropped on it from 25 feet. That's the only way you can kill a lab rat is to squish it.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say that, I mean, the reason why, you know, we see so many adolescents in treatment centers is because the parents and teachers are alarmed, you know, if they find them using marijuana. You know, it's not that, you know, that they are using, you know, drugs like alcohol or heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine, drugs that may kill them. It's because the parents are alarmed, and yes, it is wrong, I think, for adolescents to use marijuana because it affects their development. It very likely affects their academic performance. It certainly should be discouraged, but it doesn't kill anyone.
Can I just make, are you done? Sorry. I just want to make one quick point, and that is also the benefits of people switching from a more dangerous drug like booze to cannabis may actually reduce social costs.
Yeah, and also, as, you know, as the chief knows, alcohol use is certainly associated with a lot of violence. People under the influence of marijuana, you know, seldom engage in violence. The violence associated with marijuana has to do with the fact that it is illegal and there may be, you know, turf wars or there may be disputes among people who are dealing it. But it's not because of the effect of the marijuana on individuals.
Chief, a brief rebuttal before we move on.
It seems like every time you have a debate like this, it's always law enforcement against an advocate, and I think that's unfair. And I think that we should bring in some of the public health people into this arena because I think that's a major cost.
Chief, I have a master's degree in public health.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate what you're getting ready to say. One of the things that I don't think has gotten enough press is that on May 22nd of this year, the state of California declared marijuana smoke carcinogenic. We talked about, Mr. Lee articulated the fact that no one so far has died from marijuana. It's going to be interesting to see long term if that's truly the case. Is that there's a reason that they put it on the Prop 65 list to protect the citizens of California. We understand the sins or the problems associated with tobacco. A lot of our cities have banned it in our public parks. We have banned it in buildings. We've banned it in restaurants. Marijuana has 33 of the same carcinogenics as marijuana. 33. And that's as of this date right now. There's a reason why the state of California placed it on the list of carcinogenics. That's a health concern. That's a public policy question. So if I understand it in my simple mind, we are going to legalize something that we know that is going to be cancer and the associated health costs. That does not make sense to me. I realize I'm not a very complex person, but I do know that is it the responsibility of the citizens of California to pay for a substance when we know there's going to be a cost associated that is going to be outweighed by the tax revenue generated?
Chief, so far there has not been a single case of lung cancer or of emphysema attributed to the sole use of marijuana. I also agree that, you know, inhaling hot smoke full of tar and other particulates is not a good idea.
Which may lead us to a debate over vaporization versus smoking versus inhalation versus ingestion, but that might get us a little bit far afield from some of the fiscal points that we're trying to talk about here. So let's take this, mind the same vein, but in a slightly different direction.
So we're talking about the costs, the health costs.
Yeah.
And so we don't yet have health costs, you know, regarding lung cancer, emphysema associated with marijuana. Mm-hmm. There's one study recently that came out that found that people who smoked tobacco and marijuana may be more prone to emphysema than individuals who smoke tobacco alone. Mm-hmm. That's just one study so far. But so far from marijuana alone, we don't see those diseases and the associated costs.
All right. Let's take this in another direction now, somewhat related. I was watching gubernatorial candidate Tom Campbell last week in Berkeley. He's arguably the most libertarian, perhaps, of the candidates out there. And he said that he's always been an advocate of medicinal marijuana, but hesitates to get behind a legalization and taxation scheme like those that are being put forth now, because he's actually concerned that a legalized, regulated marijuana industry could still become a sort of a money laundering front for manufacturers, importers, dealers of still illicit drugs like methamphetamine, heroin, things that we don't want to legalize. On the other hand, we've had the Arizona Attorney General speak to national media about his desire to at least entertain a debate on legalization in order to deprive the Mexican drug cartels of what seems to be their main cash cow. Now, I'm curious, starting with a law enforcement perspective, Where do the costs and the benefits come down in that sort of realm in terms of its relation to what's now a criminal enterprise?
From a law enforcement perspective, I do not see the Mexican cartel leaving the state of California. They understand the money involved in this. It's astronomical. If we pass laws, we already have laws that prohibit the cultivation. If we pass laws to cultivate it, and let's say a person like Mr. Lee goes into that type of business, the Mexican cartels are not going to go, oh, I better stop. They understand the money involved. Money drives everything in our society. It's going to be with us, and it's an unknown right now. I think we'd be wishful thinking that if we legalized it and we made it go in the direction of Mr. Lee, that we would all of a sudden go away with the cartel. It's a constant problem now. The other thing that we haven't talked about, and one of the things I'm fascinated by, is the environmental hazards and the environmental decapitation of our forest system right now. It's alarming. And hopefully we're going to get some more studies in regards to what's going on to our national forests, our state parks.
I think we need a rebuttal from Mr. Lee.
I would ask the chief, why isn't the Mexican cartel distilling hard alcohol and making beer out in the national forest? You know, it's an economic argument that it's no longer economically feasible or profitable for them to do that once you legalize and tax and regulate. So, you know, that's the main argument there, is that, you know, they're not going to do it if they can't make any money. And second, as far as the environmental damage, I agree with the chief. There is a lot of environmental damage going on, but I would again say it's prohibition that's causing the environmental damage. During alcohol prohibition, we had alcohol stills set up in the national forest doing environmental damage. We don't have that problem anymore. I think that basically answers.
Doctor, anything to throw in on this?
I agree that there would not be these illegal grows naturally if the drug were illegal. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. We wouldn't have this damage to the national forest that we see now.
All right, let's start with Mr. Lee this time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the genesis and execution of this Oakland ballot measure that was just approved with a pretty overwhelming vote, I believe, last week to impose a 15-fold increase on the tax that's being levied upon the dispensaries, the four licensed dispensaries allowed in Oakland right now. Tell us a little bit about that.
I can't take the credit for it. I actually have to give the credit to the lawyer for another dispensary who originally came up with the idea. And just to explain it real quickly, when the Oakland City Council created the ordinance to regulate and permit the dispensaries, they put the dispensaries in the retail category with other retail businesses, which is 0.12% gross receipts tax. This Measure F that just passed with 80% of the vote last week creates a separate cannabis business category and creates a new tax level for that category of 1.8%, or almost 2% of the gross receipts. That is on top of the $30,000 permit fees that we've been paying for the last 5 years, annual permit fee, as well as about $300,000 in sales tax and $500,000 in income and payroll taxes. And this is a good time for me to bring up the indirect tax benefits from taxing and regulating cannabis. You know, the Amiano or Board of Equalization estimate of $1.4 billion is just in direct taxes. It doesn't even begin to look at all the indirect benefits. Not only is there there'd be thousands of jobs that would begin to pay income taxes and other payroll taxes, workman's comp insurance and unemployment insurance and all those things that would add. But then there's other indirect taxes from the business created. People coming into town to would rent hotel rooms transportation costs, food costs. Those are all the businesses around our dispensary in Oaksterdam talk about how we have been a good thing for them because we bring in traffic and we bring in business. And so we, you know, help their businesses as well, and then they pay more taxes.
Dr. Schoenfeld, you've sort of seen the marijuana debate unfold here in the Bay Area over the last 13 years, at least, since enactment. What do you think of the Oakland model as it's developed to this point of the city being this engaged in regulation and taxation of these dispensaries?
Well, I mean, it's really a matter of one's view about legalization. So it legalizes marijuana, and it apparently would collect more money, and that the part of the reason that the bill was written the way it was to encourage people to vote, and as the chief points out, we're in a time of economic crisis, and that is probably why these bills have so much support at this time, mm-hmm. because again, it would relieve somewhat the economic crisis. It's not going to solve it, of course, but it would relieve it, not only because of the taxation on the marijuana and the legalization of it, and as Mr. Lee points out, the fact that people working in the marijuana industry, whether cultivation or dispensing, would be paying taxes and also be legally employed, but we would have a great reduction in the cost of law enforcement because right now it costs a lot of money to arrest people, to jail them, to try them, to convict them, to fine them because of their marijuana use. Mm-hmm.
Chief, I see you shaking your head, but since we're recording for radio, please please give us your thoughts.
Thank you. It's very common for the advocates to associate the cost of incarceration, prosecution of quote-unquote possession of marijuana as one of the reasons that we should do away with the current laws and go with legalization. It's a fallacy. I think one of the reasons that they're able to articulate that is because of the way the criminal justice system works. A study was completed in 1998 by a gentleman named Jonathan Calkins. It's the first of its study that actually studied the people in there for quote-unquote possession of marijuana. And what it did is it, and maybe unbeknownst to you, is how the criminal justice system is played. It's very, very rarely that a person goes to prison for their original arresting offense. And that is the plea deal. And that is the way the game is played in the criminal justice system. What do I mean by that? When we arrest a person for, let's say, trafficking, possession of 2.5 million pounds for the possibility of distribution, that is the charge as they go into the system. It's rare today that a case goes to trial. When you look at the percentages, it's very, very small. What happens? The defense attorneys, the bad guy, realize how the game's played. They plead out to a reduced sentence because of that. And so when you look at the statistics, it doesn't validate that. When you look at simple possession in today's world in California, it's a traffic ticket. There's no arrest associated with it, but let's be clear. For statistical purposes, any type of ticket is called a transitory arrest. So, yes, it is arrest legally. It's a transitory arrest. But in terms of actually having someone in the police department, doesn't happen.
But there would not be this illegal trafficking, you know, that, and you're right, Chief, that, people are not in prison today. They used to be, but there aren't not people in prison today because they possessed a joint or two. They're in prison because, yes, they're trafficking larger amounts and the charge was reduced. But there wouldn't be that kind of trafficking if marijuana were legal.
I would respectfully disagree with you. There's too much money in it. It's a matter of money. There's a lot of money in this industry. I mean, let's look at it. We're talking billions and billions of dollars. And I don't think anyone has an accurate number that they can throw out and stand behind about the exact amount of money we're talking about. I truly don't.
I agree with that. I mean, you know, it's illegal, so there is no way for us to totally, you know, estimate what the exact size of the market is.
All right. Wow, a rare moment of agreement. How about that? Let's talk a little bit about some of the political realities and how they interface with these fiscal realities that we've been trying to get at. There's the elephant of this federal ban, which clearly is not going away anytime soon. There is legislation in the House to legalize. I believe Barney Frank is the sponsor, mm-hmm. but the House has not even been able to pass the Hinchey-Rohrabacher bill to pull federal funding out of enforcement in medical marijuana states. We have an agreement from the Obama administration right now not to interfere with medical marijuana operations to a certain extent. It's a little bit vague as to what that means because there have been raids on dispensaries, a few, since the Attorney General made that statement. But we still have this ban. And how, Chief, let's start with you this time and move back down the line. How do you see this ongoing federal ban, which is not going away anytime soon, interfacing with any sort of legalization and taxation scheme, be it Ammiano's bill or Mr. Lee's ballot measure?
I would respectfully disagree in regards to the direction of the Attorney General of the United States, is that what their policy is that if these cooperatives and or collectives abide by state law, mm-hmm. is what they're saying. The problem is, as what's been articulated up here, I want to say 95-98% of them don't abide by state law. They are run for profit and everything. When you listen to the statements from the President of the United States, as he has indicated, legalization is not in his vocabulary.
Mr. Lee? I'll just say real quickly, state law is not totally clear on what is allowed or what isn't. We are in a strange situation where the Board of Equalization says that we must collect and submit sales tax. But on the other hand, the Attorney General says we're supposed to be nonprofit cooperatives that only reimburse each other for the cost of providing the cannabis. Mm-hmm. So what is state law and what isn't is not totally clear, and you know, it's a gray area, and there's a lot of different jurisdictions battling over exactly how to regulate it.
13 years later, still
a gray area. Dr. Schoenfeld, what do you think of this potential interface of federal law as someone who I assume holds a federal license to dispense drugs as an MD?
Yes, but that does not include marijuana.
No, obviously not.
Marijuana is listed as Schedule 1,
right,
having no medicinal use and being highly addictive and dangerous.
Assuming it won't be rescheduled anytime soon, how would you see this interfacing with a potential legalization and taxation here?
I can't see it happening.
Yeah.
I can't see it happening. You know, unless the federal government changes its mind about legalization, I can't see how a state, you know, could implement full legalization.
All right.
Yeah, and I do see this as a first step, California changing its laws toward changing federal policy. Cannabis prohibition started with states like California making it illegal, and that was years before federal law made it illegal. And so, you know, we're repeating history in the other direction with the states taking the lead, and the federal government, you know, will hopefully listen at some point when enough states and enough the citizens vote against this prohibition.
You're attempting to put this measure on the November 2010 ballot?
Correct.
That would coincide with a gubernatorial election. Any thoughts on how this might become an issue in said gubernatorial election?
Well, we hope, you know, that's one of the reasons we are putting it on the ballot is because, as the governor, our current governor, says, it's time for a debate on the issue, and so we want to give the citizens a chance to vote on it and to get it into the discourse and debate. And so hopefully it'll force the gubernatorial candidates to take positions on this and continue to get people to think more about it.
Chief, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting is that after our governor made that statement is I was extremely disappointed as a police chief. And the reason I say that is that people adhere to all the words that he says. I don't believe an issue this important, this complex, should be open to a debate. I'm hoping tonight that the three of us are giving you some information for you making your own decision. My understanding of a debate is that you have two people up here, two people on both sides, and someone walks away a winner. But it should not be open for debate. I think one of the things that we talked about in the room prior to coming out here is that what I would like to see on the federal level is some type of committee formed. Let's talk about this issue finally in public. Let's hash out all of these things. Let's see whether or not there's myths out there, whether or not it has medicinal purposes. Let's actually address the topic. Let's come back and let's inform the people. And I would welcome anyone on that. Needless to say, I would like to have some subject experts, not just people that are adamant about it. You know, people such as doctors, other healthcare practitioners, police chiefs, any other one, subject matters experts. I think that's the direction we have to go in. We have to make the federal government understand we need to deal with this issue. We need to open it up for discussion.
Dr. Schoenfeld, I'm under the impression that a lot of that research and study that the chief alludes to has sort of been stymied, in fact, by the federal government, mm-hmm. At least under the past administration. What does that look like to you?
Yes, until the last few years, there were many studies, you know, regarding marijuana that were funded by the government, but they were all directed toward looking for harm from marijuana. And only very recently have some studies been allowed to look at potential benefits from marijuana. Some were conducted at San Francisco General Hospital by Dr. Abrams. There was a recent study at the University of California, Davis, which showed that marijuana had beneficial effects on pain in individuals with multiple sclerosis mm-hmm. and other musculoskeletal diseases. So, yes, there are studies which have shown the benefits, I mean, beyond the known, 3,000-6,000-year history of marijuana, mm-hmm. where we know there have been at least no deaths ever from it. And, you know, and anecdotally, you know, we know that there are many benefits from it. Most of the people who have medical marijuana recommendations have these recommendations for the treatment of chronic pain of some sort. It also includes patients, you know, with AIDS and with cancer or receiving treatment for cancer. And to the extent that marijuana is less expensive than pharmaceutical drugs, it saves money, you know, by its use. I mean, for example, there is a legal form of THC called Marinol. Even though it's legal and marijuana is illegal, except for medical marijuana, Marinol is far more expensive than the marijuana that someone could buy in Dolores Park or on the street someplace.
As an aside, we're going to be taking your questions very soon now, so if you have a question, please consider making your way over to the microphone now. Get in line. When in about 4 minutes or so, we'll start accepting your questions. Yes, Chief.
One question is, the good doctor was talking about in some of the federal situations. If you haven't had a chance to, I'd like to make a plug. There's a paper that was written out of Illinois, and it's entitled Marijuana Dispensaries in the Federal Government, Recommendations to the Obama Administration. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, it's available online through the web. Take a peek at that. It's written from an academia standpoint, and you can tell it was written by a law enforcement person or someone like myself. But it's an interesting read, and the reason I say that, it's basically asking the Obama administration to step in and start addressing what you were talking about.
All right. Let's go back a little bit again to the Oakland measure. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but we got into a discussion of law enforcement and law enforcement priorities, I think, and I think we need to bring out what the Oakland law enforcement stance on medicinal marijuana has been thus far. Mr. Lee?
They've been very good. We've been able to work with the OPD to regulate the dispensaries and protect them, guard them, and so we've had a very good working relationship with the OPD. When back in the mid-90s, when this issue first came up, the OPD actually had training sessions where advocates would go and try to educate the police about the new laws and about how medical marijuana works and how they can distinguish, you know, really legit patients from non-legit ones.
And this is the context from which this taxation structure grew, and from that law enforcement relationship. What has your experience been in El Cerrito, Chief?
Well, El Cerrito is somewhat unique, and in we've banned them. We have banned dispensaries, cooperatives, collectives in El Cerrito because of the associated effects of them. And so our response at this time is it's a little bit different than Oakland's.
All right.
Can I just put in one quick word for hemp, industrial hemp? We haven't talked at all about that. The only thing keeping industrial hemp illegal in California is the fact that cannabis, THC, rich cannabis, is illegal. Other countries like Canada and most of Europe have been growing hemp now for over 10 years. All the hemp you see in Whole Foods, supermarkets, the hemp soy milk, the hemp seed candy bars, none of this gets you high, by the way. It's just nutritionally beneficial. And then there's also the other industrial uses that are like for building materials and textiles and things like that. That would all, our California farmers would be able to grow that crop, and that would be another economic benefit.
Also, I fear, slightly far afield, but
I think for the economic benefits, it's real. You know, we're sending the money to Canada for them to grow the hemp seed.
Was that for Canada? All right. I see a long line of questioners, so I think we're going to jump over to you. But first, as a reminder to our audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Club's Inforum, and tonight we're hosting Marijuana Economics, the Pros and Cons of California's Cash Crop. I'm Josh Richman, moderator for the evening, and in discussion with Chief Scott Kirkland, the Chief of Police of the El Cerrito Police Department, Board of Directors of California Peace Officers Association, and Board of Directors, California Police Chiefs Association, Dr. Eugene Schoenfeld, court-appointed panel psychiatrist of the Superior Courts of Alameda, Contra Costa, Marin, and San Francisco counties, and Richard Lee, founder of Oaksterdam University and founder of the Oakland Civil Liberties Alliance. Now, let's go to the audience for their questions.
Hi. I'm curious if you guys could share your thoughts on how you see the new tax or fee, whatever you want to call it, affecting supply and demand within the state for marijuana. And then just second, if I could, Could you talk a little bit about how the product, the Mexican cartels, are either growing or moving through the state, interfaces with the dispensaries, if at all?
A very pithy answer from each of you, given the very long line of questioners we have. Mr. Lee?
We don't really deal with the Mexican cartels, and as far as anybody else in the medical marijuana business, I don't think anybody else does. That's a totally kind of separate area. As far as the supply and demand, theoretically with legalization, the supply would catch up with the demand, and also with the end of the prohibition extra cost premium added, the prices would come down for the patients, and it would help them.
Dr. Schoenfeld?
Yeah, I agree that the cost of marijuana would be reduced, and that would more than compensate for the extra taxes. So I don't see it affecting the use in any way.
Chief Kirkland?
The prediction by the state of California, as I indicated before, is that consumption would increase by 40%. In terms of the cartels, they're growing the product right now. Even though that Mr. Lee might not be dealing with the cartels, he is dealing with someone that is growing the hemp. People like him, and I'm not trying to accuse him in a way at all. People like him that are selling this, dispensing it, are dealing in some fashion with the cartel.
Can I just answer that one sentence? All the cannabis is being grown by cartels out there, so if you buy cannabis, it doesn't necessarily mean you're dealing with a cartel.
Next question.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your participation in this great debate. There are debates of all forms, by the way, Chief, from the rigorous Lincoln Douglas, et cetera. But more a perspective into both of your, or all three of your positions in terms of the cultural reasons why substance abuse occurs in our society. Many people believe that it's like a gangsterism run amok in America from the gangsterism of misogyny, et cetera.
All right, Chief, let's start with you on that.
It's interesting, and I'm not quite sure I have the answers, is substance abuse. What an interesting topic, and I know we can talk about it for days, is one of the things that I think we do wrong in our society is glorify substances. And we do it to a fault. We all enjoy movies, television shows, that show these individuals that are having a very, very difficult time. And we glorify it, and I think that adds to the allure of it. And I think that we are almost our own worst enemies in terms of what we show, what we buy. And I think it's the film industry is guilty to a certain degree, but we, our consumers, are guilty just as well because we buy their products.
Dr. Schoenfeld.
Well, it sounds like, Chief, you're saying that if marijuana were not an illicit substance, it wouldn't have the allure that you just mentioned.
Hmm. Right. That's not what I'm saying at all. Yeah.
But if I think there is a point there about the forbidden fruit syndrome, and the World Health Organization has seen that this in their studies comparing the Netherlands to United States. In the Netherlands, they found kids experiment with cannabis 50% as much as they do here because it's not the exciting, dangerous thing that it is here is one possible reason that there it's the kids don't abuse it as much as they do here.
Ma'am, your question?
Well, first I wanted to mention there has been, a national study in 1972, the Schaefer Commission at the national level. It was headed by Raymond Schaefer, Republican governor of Pennsylvania, and they concluded marijuana should be decriminalized.
Your question.
I wanted to ask you, you started this by saying you questioned the Board of Equalization's numbers, saying, well, they can't possibly be that high and they're just going on something else. And yet you say that we'll never get rid of the Mexican cartels because astronomical profits involved. So which is it? Either if we legalize it, we could make a lot of tax money, or there's this astronomical amount in it. Is it possible that you're not seeing the benefits of a legal regulated market because El Cerrito will not permit it to happen?
I hope I'm not that short-sighted. Is the reason I brought up the Board of Equalization analysis is that as you look at the debate now, as it's carried on to the media, they are bringing up the numbers $1.2 to $2 billion. That's attracting a lot of attention. It's garnering a lot of attention, whether it's radio, media, or the likes. My belief, those numbers are based on false pretenses. Those numbers are based on false pretenses. When you look at Almiano's bills, there's a lot of things in there that I don't think people realize, and I know we don't have time right now, And that's why I say that. When you look at marijuana right now, it's been in the black market for a number of years. Just by legalizing, I am not convinced that the black market is going to go away. As a consumer, why am I going to pay an additional X number of dollars?
Are you saying as a police chief that even if marijuana is legal, that police are not going to be able to enforce the law against people selling it illegally?
My answer is if you subscribe to the Ammiano bill, read it, because there is no enforcement action.
All right. Next question.
Hi. Thank you guys for coming tonight. Assuming that California legalizes marijuana, other states follow suit, and the federal government acknowledges marijuana as legal, can you ever see California as an exporter of marijuana? And what would the financial implications be on California's economy?
Mr. Lee?
Sure. We export lots of, we grow all the agricultural from the valley. We have the big agricultural industry in the valley, so why not? If other states don't want to grow it for themselves, we should create jobs and taxes from it.
Next question.
Okay. This question is for Richard Lee. I read a press release earlier this week by the Green Cross of San Francisco, which is a cannabis collective here in the city, that they disapprove of Oakland's Measure F because, quote, they believe that it prices out. It's the first step toward pricing out patients and demeaning the medical movement. How do you respond to that?
I disagree. I think that it's the first step toward lowering prices through further legitimization or regulation and taxation of it, and that right now most of the price of cannabis is a prohibition premium. And the tax component would be less than that, and so the prices would come down. As far as threatening medical marijuana patients, I don't think that's true. I think, if anything, taxing and regulating for adults would take the medical marijuana patients off the front lines and would make that, less controversial. And also, I have a personal problem with people like Kevin Reed saying that it shouldn't be legal for other people. It should only be legal for him. And I have a problem with medical marijuana patients who say it should only, it's legal for us and that's fine, so forget everybody else. I think they should think about other people, just as a lot of people who have been in favor of legalizing it for adults have been only for medical marijuana or fought for medical marijuana first for years. And so I'd like to see that go the other way.
Next question.
Hi, this question is for Mr. Kirkland. It's a multiple-part question, so please bear with me.
I'll try.
Please keep it as brief as possible.
And it's going to be brief, so yeah. I'm not going to take up as much of your time as whatever.
4 minutes.
But thanks. You said that the Mexican mafia would not really go away if we legalized marijuana, correct? And you had stated this earlier, that the mafia would still be here if, in fact, we did legalize marijuana. Now, my question over there is, if we did legalize and regulate cannabis, would law enforcement not be able to reprioritize and focus on literally illegal production and distribution, through channels such as the mafia? If they're really unable to, would that not contribute to as much waste? The perpetuation of this $500 per person per California citizen cost of unnecessary crimes that we already have. Prosecution of marijuana crimes.
Okay, I don't recall giving that number out, but if I understand your question, bear with me. Is that, first of all, I've never said the Mexican mafia. We're talking about the Mexican cartel.
Cartel and mafia.
And that's the big unknown, is that I don't believe I said, and if I did, I was certainly wrong, that they would go away, they would stay here. That's an unknown. There's a lot of money involved in this. The cartels and people like them are where the money is. Right. This is the cash crop of California. When you were talking about the $500, what I was talking about was the cost to the California citizens in 2005 in regards to substance abuse as it relates to alcohol as well as tobacco. And it was in excess of $500. And I was making that point is in regards to the revenues collected.
Okay. But my question was if you would be able to, if, say, your police department would be able to reprioritize, prosecution and attention to certain crimes over cannabis possession crimes if it was legalized.
Well, I think you have to look at every police department. I think that people have this misconception is that police departments, all they do is search for people with joints on them. That's not the reality of what we do. We don't have time for that. We don't have the personnel for that. Is that the only time we really come in contact with marijuana is when we arrest someone for some other charge. That's it. As I indicated before, if we make some type of stop, vehicle and or a pedestrian stop, and the person has marijuana on them, if they don't have a card, they're given a citation. We don't go out and search for people that have marijuana in their pockets. That's not our goal. We have other things to do. I think our priorities are set, and I think our priorities are correct. Our priorities are to safeguard the citizens of our communities.
Next question.
Yeah, you touched briefly on the environmental issues of marijuana, but talked mostly about the Parks Department.
Mm-hmm.
How about the power consumption for indoor grows? Do you think that there's a possibility to make marijuana production possibly a green job? Are there green ways to produce marijuana?
Dr. Schoenfeld?
Yeah, grow it outdoors. There's a reason why it's grown indoors, is to hide it. I mean, if it's grown outdoors, you know that one of the peculiarities of Proposition 215 and the subsequent law, SB 420, is, you know, it specifies that in the state overall, people with medical marijuana recommendations can grow 6 mature plants or 12 immature plants. The reason for that provision is so that the plants can be sexed, because the male plants are not potent, really. But it doesn't specify the size of the plants. I had a patient send me a photograph of himself standing in front of his 6 plants in Northern California. They look like big Christmas trees, or about 15 feet tall. So that's the reason why these marijuana operations are indoors. It's mostly to hide the fact that they're growing it.
Mr. Lee, briefly.
I just wanted to make one point about that, is and that's why in our initiative we use the 25 square feet as a limitation as opposed to a plant number, because plants can be anywhere from 1 foot to 10 mm-hmm. feet tall, you know, and one plant can take up 25 square feet. So we think it's a much better way to regulate the yield and the amount people are growing is to do it by square foot and not plant numbers.
But if I could, you were talking about indoor grows. They trouble me a great deal, and they should trouble all of us, is that the majority of indoor grows, they're stealing power from us. Who's paying for it? You and I are. And that troubles me. The other thing that's occurring right now is that when you have an indoor grow, is that you're setting up the house for mold. And that mold is very, very dangerous to us. And the cost of cleanup to the unsuspecting homeowner, because these are usually renters, is astronomical. And usually what you have to do is go in and gut the houses to try to clean up the mold. So there's a cost associated with it that the taxpayers of the state of California are paying for right now. The fire danger is just incredible. The thing that I know it's off on a tangent, but the thing that I'm more concerned about is safety of my personnel. Safety of my personnel.
So you support legalization to prevent those problems, Chief?
Nice try.
I would argue with that his assertion that most are stealing the power. You know, I don't think there's any hard evidence that, you know, we don't know how many people out there growing in the first place, so we don't know how many are stealing power. And the reason they would be stealing power is because the police have been known to look at their PG&E bill and bust them because of that. So prohibition, again, is causing these problems, in my opinion.
Sir, your question.
From what I know, there are basically 3 kinds of people who grow, and there are a great many of them who grow in California. One kind, and they're really not very many, are people who are within the system, the current system, and who grow medically legal marijuana.
Your question, sir.
Then there are the cartels. Then there are the people in between. And what I want to ask about is what happens to the people in between under a legalization and fee system. Do they become illegal if they don't work with authorized wholesalers?
Mr. Lee?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Thank you.
What if somebody doesn't want to, say, in Oakland, doesn't want to pay the $50 tax and just wants to sell on the street? Does that become illegal?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a job for the police to find that out.
Right. Yeah, Yeah, that would remain illegal under our initiative.
But if you look, and under the Ammiano bill as well, in its current form, certainly.
In the Ammiano bill in its current form right now, you're talking about an infraction, which is a ticket, subject to a fine of about $250. So there's no incentive to that.
For personal possession. I think he was talking about sales if they were sailing without a permit, which would be much
more
penalties.
Next question.
Hi. My question is regarding two statistics that were mentioned a few times. And one of them is that if it was legalized, consumption would increase by 40% and prices would drop by 50%. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is the drug market for marijuana really that elastic? And is the mental process, if it was legal, more people are going to smoke? And about the price, if it's regulated, why does it have to drop 50%? Where in Amsterdam, the prices are really very comparable to here, and it's legal.
Chief, you want to start on that briefly?
When I made those revelations, is what I was articulating, what's in the bill analysis from the state of California is that what their concerns are, as articulated, is that the consumption rate would be up 40%, and then the price would reduce. I think people need to be aware of that. I'm sorry? The bill analysis?
Yeah. I mean, because I know smokers, and very few of them have ever said, if it was legal, I would start smoking. Most people who don't smoke, I've heard, I don't like it. It's not because it's so easy to get it that I don't think most people process it that way.
Please understand, I was just articulating what's in the report. That's not something that I made up or anyone on this panel made up. That's what's in the analysis of the bill to the legislature.
I think it's hard to have a hard number on exactly what the increase would be if there, you know, is one. And also that increase may not be in the number of people. It may be in some people consuming more, consuming less alcohol, you know, and switching to cannabis. So, you know, some of that increase may not be in population-wise. It may be in individuals switching from more dangerous drugs to less dangerous.
We have time for one more question with some very, very pithy answers.
This is from the San Francisco Chronicle, about the front page Tuesday, day before yesterday. Now, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, in 2003, there were 466,000 marijuana plants that were captured by law enforcement here in California.
The question needs to be pithy, too.
Okay. In 2008, there were nearly 3 million plants. The question is to the chief of police, if the Mexican cartel can hire 10 people to plant marijuana in California, whereas the taxpayers can only pay for one law enforcement agency to stop them, how are they going to stop it?
This is not a problem just for local jurisdictions. It's a problem for federal jurisdiction as well. Your concerns are right, is that how are you going to stop it? It's not being stopped now with the current deployment of officers and or eradication plans. Your point's well taken. I don't have an answer for you.
All right. I guess that's an answer in and of itself. Well, let's give a very big hand to the panelists and to our audiences members for their thoughts here tonight. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you, panelists. And now this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.